Network Automation Nerds Podcast. Hello and welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network automation, network engineering, Python, and other technology topics. I'm your host, Eric Cho. Today on the show, we continue to have conversation with Taha, aka Net Automator. I have to mention that every single time because it's just so awesome. How did you get that handle? Like, somebody must have like offered you to pay you $10,000. If I have money, I'll pay for that. But I'm just this plain old Eric Cho. But last week we talked to Taha about his journey, his path, how he got into technology. And this week I am super excited to continue our conversation and kind of, you know, talk about where the tire meets the road, so to speak, right? Like really the meat, nitty gritty, like what do you find interesting about containers and all the hotness about Kubernetes and maybe AI. I don't know. I mean, we're obligated to talk about AI every single time to boost our ratings, right? But anyway, Taha, it's great to have you back on the show.
Fantastic. Eric, it's an absolute pleasure. Pleasure to have thank you so much. It's an honor really to be here. And I'm very honored. Thank you.
Yeah, the honor is all mine. I mean, we were so excited to talk last episode, but in fact it was just like 30 minutes ago we started recording, but it almost got away from us. You know, the reason why I reached out to you previously, I mean, obviously you're an excellent human being. I love everything you posted about, but what kind of triggered this conversation was a couple of weeks ago, you posted about running containers on all three of the, I mean, not iOS per se, but all three of the latest Cisco, operating systems. So iOS XE, iOS XR, and XLS. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so one thing I've noticed about, and I think this is a quite, the topic itself, I think it lacks quite a lot of resources.
Yes, yes.
There isn't much resource, and I think sometimes it's also misunderstood. One thing I've noticed about network automation is that, you know, a few years back, you know, it was just network automation, right? It was a particular field, you know, everyone wanted to go in, it was a DevNet. But I think as we sort of dial forward, it's sort of having subdivisions within network automation, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so now you can, you know, you have guys who are excellent with AI and network automation, you have guys who are, you know, able to do amazing stuff in a multi-vendor environment. You have guys, the DevNet guys, then you have, you know, and then there was a particular field which I thought was not getting enough attention. And I think one of the reasons is the current role that I'm in is sort of pulled me in towards that way. So essentially, it's on-box programmability or on-box automation, right? Mm-hmm. It's a topic. Mm-hmm. Now, it's like I said, it's quite a broad topic, and I think the way it's marketed, especially at Cisco, maybe isn't quite so helpful to sort of understanding how much, you know, what you're able to do with it. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I found it's such an interesting topic, and it's such an amazing topic, really. Essentially, at its core, on-box programmability refers to sort of performing automation via the network device itself, as mm-hmm. opposed to doing an automation deployment from an external sort of box. So when we're doing automation, you know, we're essentially deploying from a laptop or a PC that's hooked up somewhere to the network, and we may have Python, and we're essentially deploying that, you know, the script or what it may be. But And that is sort of the opposite of on-box. On-box refers to actually doing the automation within the network itself. So sort of think of like an air-gapped network, right, that has no access to any PC or endpoint connectivity that can do automation. And just being able to automate from the inside of the actual network itself. So one of the nodes will act as an agent and will go ahead and automate the rest as well. That is, in its core, what on-box programmability is the ability to perform automation from the inside of your network, as opposed to doing a deployment, a Python deployment or an Ansible from an external node, external PC. And that is exactly what it is. So, and I think the way it's marketed by Cisco, so for example, one of the key things that was marketed a few years back was IOX, right?
Yep.
Which is an acronym for iOS Linux. Now, it was sort of marketed as a application hosting technology where you're able to host applications on the edge of the network, so within a switch, for example, right. And you're able to run script. But I think it wasn't given its due diligence. I think there is far more things that were sort of overlooked that could have been looked at, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's a massive, massive field. With this technology, you've got essentially a Linux box. I mean, you're essentially converting your network switch, your data center switch, like a NexOS or iOS XE switch. You know, your Catalyst 90-300s. You're essentially converting that to a Linux box, right? And yep. the sort of it's quite endless, really, of what you're able to do. And I think it wasn't approached from that perspective. It was more approached from the container side. So majority of the questions that I've seen that's been come up when I've been posting is the sort of things that come in DMs, like, why would I need to do that, right? like what is the point, right? Like, what can you explain to me?
Yeah.
Why would I want to do that in the first place? Well, it has a plenty of there's plenty of use case for this, and I think that is one of the, and one of them is obviously, you know, running Python, complex Python scripts, for example, or right. Bash script, and not just Python scripts, Bash scripts as well,
yep.
that can utilize the underlying hardware. So, for example, that can be executed by an event manager script, perform specific tasks. Maybe you want to have a look at, maybe you want to see where specific adjacencies have gone down, and then you right. want to OSPF, and you want them to come back. I mean, there's so many sort of things that you could do. Obviously, when you've got Python in front of you, it's endless, right? It's the limit is really down to your creativity. So running a Python script inside a box is always helpful, right? It's just, you know, and I wouldn't obviously recommend running a game on there. Obviously, that's right.
You don't want to play Doom on the. I've seen people do that, right? Like, people have played Doom.
But I don't think it's helpful. You know,
it's not a career enhancing movement. It might be, you know, for your own pleasure, but. Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, I remember, I think you hit on some of the use cases where, you know, in your brief introduction is, I remember the first time I saw it, this wasn't on a Cisco box, this was on an Arista box actually, but there are two kind of use cases, that main thing that we use it for, obviously you know more about it, but that you mentioned. So the first thing is you're in this airtight space, right? Like your data center.
Right,
and it's hard for anything to get into that data center. You have to get, like, as any big tech would tell you, or any kind of like healthcare, you know, government agency, it requires a lot of approval, right? Like it's a really daunting process to go. But in this case, if you have something that's already included in the bundle, that's already approved and, you know, blessed by the management, then you have the Swiss Army knife where you could, you know, I mean, it's not going to cut that steak really well, but it will do the job, right? So in this, that's the first use case where it's an airtight, air gap environment, a closed loop, and then you already have the SAR Swiss Army knife called Python and Bash and Linux.
Absolutely.
And the second was, you know, as you talk about like event reaction, right? Like if you have an external management going in, it's never going to be as reactive, as fast as somebody that's on board. Right. Absolutely. And that's exactly what you said.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. I think that is also key. I think one of the other use cases as well, and I think it's sort of overlooked, is running a low latency application and containers on the edge, you know, and I use the term low latency, and I use that for a reason, and I'll tell you exactly why. You know, it's no point, no use, you know, having an application somewhere down in the other side of the world, you know, in a data center, other side of the world, where that application is sort of being used by your current sort of building, right? For everyone in your building, it's actually no use having it somewhere in the cloud when it's used by a particular sort of, you know, endpoints within your company. It makes far more sense to have it on your edge, right? Right. You're closer to the edge. You get a lot of benefits, obviously. You'll have low latency. But also, I think one of the, what I recently, I was speaking to someone, a colleague of mine about this, and I thought, you know, how interesting that can be. But then he made an interesting point where he said, but, you know, maybe that company wants to move to the cloud. That's, you know, that's their goal, right? It's to move everything to the cloud. And I said, you know, they're essentially coming back to the old method where they're having resources sort of, you know, on-prem, which not what they want, but you know that is it. But the more you think about that, the more you do realize that it is that in the, you know, when a company moves to the cloud, usually it's, you know, from a company that I worked with, from a hybrid standpoint of view. I mean, you're going to move your resources, or you could even move your entire 100% resources, right? You can do a lift and shift and move everything over into the cloud. But the issue is, I think one thing that people tend to overlook, you're still going to have a network infrastructure on-prem, right? I mean, you're not going to have, like, you know, there's not going to be a digital people, as one of my friend puts it, that's able to go into the cloud and, you know, get all the information somewhere and, you know, run those virtual machines, whatever it may be that you're doing in the cloud. You know, you're going to need a network infrastructure on-prem regardless, right? So you're going to have a bunch of switches, right? You're going to have a bunch of endpoints. These are sort of the crucial aspects, that things that you're going to have. So one of my thinking was that, you know, you're going to have switches, and it, you know, the sort of the 9300 iOS XE now is becoming quite a standard now, really. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, I've seen companies that actually use it as an access, which is quite amazing, you know, a switch where some people will probably say it's more sort of a distribution type of switches, sure. The 9200, 9300 Catalyst. So I thought to myself, you know, why not utilize that hardware? You've already got the hardware in place. So why not utilize that hardware? And someone might say to me, look, again, an argument could be that, you know, look, it's, you know, sort of high availability, cloud or private provider. But, you know, if you're obviously nobody has a single switch in their company, right? They have multiple switches. So you could have that in a container and load balance it across. Again, you know, if it doesn't make sense where, you know, for me, and this doesn't really make sense, where you're going to have a one application that's utilized by a group of endpoints, right, within a specific location, and that application that they're utilizing is somewhere down, you know, in another country in a data center, when you could have it locally hosted on the edge of your network, and you just push it to your edge of network, and it's much more low latency. And that is, you know, one of the really good use cases, I believe, that could be utilized. Having a sort of running a containers on your switches, they don't have, believe it or not, and this was another question that came up, whether they affect the performance of the switch itself. They don't. I mean, majority of these run in a containerized environment, so they don't actually have that ability. Now, the other sort of use case as well is the ability to run not just specific, you know, sort of bespoke applications, but run network diagnostic tools, right? I mean, it's great to have Wireshark, right, on your switch. It's a valuable tool. And nowadays you can even get, you know, there's something called, I think it was a Teratorm, where it's actually, I can't remember the name, I think it's a T-Shark, but it's a terminal version of Wireshark. So you can actually run it on the switch itself without needing any external endpoint. So you can actually launch the container, and it's a terminal container, but it's essentially Wireshark, right? It's a containerized version of Wireshark. And those, you know, the ability to run Wireshark and capture sort of, you know, frames and packets, it's, you know, really, I can't really think of any words, you know, how beneficial it is to a network engineer, especially if you don't need any, you know, laptop or PC connected to, where you can just do it directly from the switch itself, you know, using a console port. It is beneficial. You don't need to open up a browser. It's right there. You know, you just put it, pop it into your console port, and you can run that. And I think that is one of the sort of use cases that's not realized, that, you know, you can run network diagnostic tools as well on your switches, which is really, really helpful when things, you know, don't go according to plan. And I think the overall Linux sort of capabilities is overlooked as well, because when you sort of have a containerized version of Linux, I think the biggest mistake people tend to make is that they assume this is a gadget or a feature, but it's not. You're essentially turning your switch into a Linux box, right? That's what it is, right? And from that moment, just think of it as a Linux box, and the possibilities are endless, really. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was going to just echo your point of earlier, just before I forget, I think that's essentially not the argument, but the advantage of having edge networking, right? Like, is you can't backhaul everything back to the cloud. For example, if you think of so Cisco is actually the sponsor for the 49ers, for like American football 49ers stadium. Right. Yeah. And in order to provide that edge, you know, sports experience, you're not going to be able to backhaul everything back into the cloud and having that response back. You need to run something natively within the stadium. Absolutely. And there's also somebody else who was, you know, and I was chatting with about edge networking, and he brought up a good point about, you know, if you think about it, each Tesla is actually an edge network by itself. And whenever they get that sensor coming back in to determine, you know, if that's a child standing in front of that car, you're not going to backhaul to the cloud and say, no, don't hit that cloud, right? Your response time should be in the sub milliseconds. So those are actual use cases where it makes sense to run something natively. And if you extend that into the switch, absolutely, that, you know, it's beneficial with a Linux and a hard drive. The point to make about performance, of course, right? So a lot of people don't realize where, you know, you have your management plan, but in order to combine those like ACOs and, you know, process pipelines and your FIBs, they actually get compiled into your FIB in your FPGA. So that is where that, you know, that packet's being switched. It's not that, you know, these process, they don't go into the Linux kernel and come back down and process it. So yeah, so both of your points are super valid, and I appreciate you bringing those up. You know, the performance as well as the packet switching impacting, right? Like your FIB is not going to be impacted.
No, the FIBs shouldn't be impacted, and you know, Cisco's express forwarding is in place. So you have all of these things in a data plane. I mean, you know, the data plane itself as a hardware should not be affected. So majority of the data plane operations will definitely, I would say all of them really would not be affected in a containerized environment. And it's quite interesting that you bring that topic up, Eric, because it sort of leads me to my sort of next point. Recently, I've been sort of researching this topic in quite in depth. And I came across, you know, what makes NXOS so special compared to any other operating system that was developed by Cisco. I think what makes NXOS really, really interesting is the fact that
it's an acquisition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's one part, right?
It wasn't built by Cisco, so it wasn't like poison.
That's the elephant in the room. Let me just skip that one, guys. But you know, it's really its ability to sort of they call it, I think Cisco refers to it as, if you go to the Cisco developer website, as Open NXOS, right? And what they've seemed to have done is quite remarkable. So they've opened up the Linux kernel, right? The Linux kernel, this is where the actual hardware is running on, the actual underlay that the hardware is running on, the operating system itself, right? They've pretty much opened that, exposed that to the user. And it's quite amazing because it has direct utilization of the hardware itself, right? Unlike, I'll explain in a minute about iOS XE, which is a bit different, but it's direct. It's actually running an embedded form of Linux, right? Especially for sort of essentially embedded hardware. Linux. It's called Wind River Linux, and I think it's mainly
not Ubuntu.
No, it's definitely not Ubuntu. No, definitely not Ubuntu. Or Red Hat. I can assure you that. So it's a Wind River Linux, and it's quite interesting because I didn't quite understand how this was the actual underlay, right? Because obviously NXOS is there. Now, what I've learned was over the time is that after sort of digging deep, I couldn't find any, like I said, it lacks quite a lot of resources, is that NXOS is actually a use space sort of process, right? It's actually a software that's running in a user space, where the Wind River Linux is actually the underlay hardware. So you've got two layers, right? You've got the NXOS, which has all your, you know, CLI configs, you know, the configs that all network engineers are sort of familiar with. And then you have the underlay, right, which is the Linux hardware, which is the Winrin Linux hardware, which is utilizing the hardware itself, right? This is what I couldn't I couldn't quite understand is how they interconnect. And I finally, sort of after a lot of research, made that answer. There's a module called Net Broker Module, right? Mm-hmm. And what that essentially, that piece of software that is, that it synchronizes those two layers. So mm-hmm. for example, when a network, so let me just say, so for give you an example, say you've gotten an update on the RIB on the NXOS, and what the networker module does is it synchronizes that back onto the Linux kernel, right? So that they both match. So it synchronizes it to the lower layer. So it's like a synchronization module that synchronizes the configs on the NXOS to the underlying Linux kernel, which is the Wind River Linux. And that is how it sort of utilizes the hardware resources. And it is very interesting because, like I said, it's very different. They call it Bash. I think it's you know, I think it's you feature enable Bash, but once you enable it, it's essentially, you know, they call it Bash, but it's much more than that. It's actually a Wind River Linux. It's not a containerized Linux mm-hmm. like the other forms. It's a much more sort of a full on, and it has direct utilization to the hardware itself. And then you've got, you know, the other sort of Linux on there, which is the containerized Linux, which is what they call referred to as the guest shell, which I'm sure you probably know about, right? And that is IOX, is what I think they name it, which stands for iOS mm-hmm. Linux. Now, what essentially that guest shell is, it's a containerized form of Linux, right? And those of you who doesn't know what container is, essentially a self-sufficient application that has all of its dependencies to run in a sort of in any environment. The Linux that the containers run is CentOS, depending on what version of the hardware iOS you're using. It could be 7, it could be 8, but you could upgrade this, right? But mm-hmm. what's quite interesting is through both of these, right, they have full package management utilities, you know, such as Yum, you know, and a lot of people don't think it's like, okay, wait a second, if I have package utility management, and if I essentially have, you know, a full Linux kernel, couldn't I run Ansible on this? Yes, you can run Ansible, could I run NetMiko module if I can get a module inside Python using pip install? Yes, you can. I've done it. You can run NetMiko on it without any issues, right? Yeah. Can you run Terraform? Absolutely. You can download the Terraform ARM64 version of Terraform. I've tried it. It works. It's great. I mean, can you imagine having all of those utilities within your Unbox environment? And I think that is just amazing. Now, one of those,
well, you don't have to imagine. Taha just did it for you.
exactly.
Show you those examples.
Absolutely, it's really, really amazing that you're able to. And I think one of the things that I came up against was that let's just assume that I'm in a sort of an air gapped environment mm-hmm. where it's almost impossible, right, to right. get anything into that environment. Even, you know, attaching a laptop that has Python and all the modules installed and all the goodies installed, right? You know, because let's be honest, you know, if you haven't got the request module and it doesn't come native with Python, and if you haven't got, you know, a good, let's say, an SSH module like Paramico, you're sort of limited in right. what you can do, right? In terms of automated network devices, right. You're very limited, actually. Yeah. And it doesn't, you know, the Python that it has, I think it's 3.7, I can't remember, but it doesn't have the request module, so you can't do any API actions. Because those aren't native to the
standard library. Yeah.
Exactly. So, and it didn't have, you know, Paramico or any of it. So things were very difficult, right? And this is the challenge that I face. So for example, I've got 100 access switches, right? And on my core, I've got one good Nexus switch. And I've also got some good iOS XE9. What can I do? Or what could you do, you know, in order, let's say we need to create VLANs across all of those access switches. How can we automate that process? Right. And at the same time, you know, we've got a complete air gap system. We can't do anything. But how can we automate, put ourselves in a position where we can automate all of those repetitive sort of toil tasks without, you know, attaching any sort of a third-party device, you know, what can we do? And I think that is something that's interesting that I'm working on at the moment, because it is very difficult, as you probably know, to do with anything with Python, especially when you're dealing with switches that are networked and you don't have any SSH modules and you've got the standard library. Good luck to anybody who wants to create an SSH module from scratch, because you're in a world of pain, you know? You're in a world of pain.
Kirk Byer I bet even Kirk couldn't rewrite the whole thing within like an hour, right? Even though he's the creator.
Absolutely. So that's the challenges that I'm facing at the moment, and I'm hoping that I can overcome those.
Yeah, no, I like the point you brought up about like namespaces, right? Like the fact that native Linux with access to hardware shouldn't be overlooked, because maybe people are not too familiar with like namespacing. Is, you know, it's an expensive operation to copy a packet or whatever from like one memory space to another, and especially if you have like Linux, who's the latest kernels, and you know, free kernels before that, have a very very clear delimitation between, you know, your kernel namespace versus your other namespaces, where like moving around is very difficult, and that's expensive operation, which is why the process is so slow. And something like dpdk, or in this case like nxos, we're able to, you know, kind of bridge the two, where, you know, you don't have to copy it between namespaces. Exactly. You just have it in one place, and then you get that performance. And like you said, they also have like a guest shell where, you know, it's just regular CentOS that, you know, you're all familiar with. Yeah,
that's it. That's it. You know, and I think the other aspect that's quite scary as well, that I have personally found during my research, is that with the containerized version of Linux, you've got to remember it's a container, right? It has no understanding of the current infrastructure that it's in, whether it's in a switch, whether it's running in a PC. It doesn't know that, right? It's a containerized. So one of the great difficulties that many people have with this is the ability, how do I root this to the hardware? You know, how do I attach this with the actual interfaces, right? I've got the Linux container running CentOS, but how do I root it outside of my network? How do I make sure that container is able to reach all my network devices so I can automate? And I think those are the things that are sort of scaring people. And there's many ways you can do this. You can use things like virtual port groups and attach the container to the virtual port group and then associate. And then that way you will have the sort of adjacency with the, it's a virtual port group, essentially an SVI, right? It's a virtual virtual interface, and associate that with a physical interface. So you'll essentially have to root that container as well, of that outside of the box itself. And I think that may be quite scary, but with the NXOS, remember the bash shell, it's directly utilizing the hardware. It's not in a containerized form, so you don't need to do all that routing and so forth. You can directly, you know, perform your automation. You could, let's say, you know, if you've got the right modules, you could, you know, go ahead, let's say, automate, you know, the creation of, let's say, VLAN 20 in 100 switches with ease, without using any other PC, just by using that box itself. You know, it's got all the utilities that you need in there. For example, it's got Vim. It has everything as an editor. So you could essentially create a small script, Python script, and it does a lot of interesting things as well, because there's an interesting module that it has on there, which is a CLI module, which essentially allows it to interact with the actual underlying NXOS CLI. So, yeah, it is very, very interesting. And I think it's a topic maybe not marketed correctly. I personally believe, because I think you shouldn't just assume it's just for an application hosting platform. It's much more than that. I would say some of the features of these sort of these switches, especially the newer models, are amazing. I mean, they're absolutely amazing, really.
I mean it's hard to convey, I think, the overall picture, right? Like, or how, like, to just tell that all the awesomeness of the setup would be, but I think it's safe to say that it is a way to give you all the tools that you're familiar with without a lot of external dependencies, right? Absolutely. Like you're absolutely 100%. Able to just do a lot of the things that you're so used to as opposed to, you know, maybe I remember a long time ago when I was, you know, trying to automate something and all I had available was a Tickle shell, right, in iOS. And then you have to like change your context. You have to learn Tickle syntax. It wasn't hard, but it was nonetheless another thing that you have to learn and have to do. But now that you have these unbox for all of, you know, NXOS, XR, SE, then you're able to just transfer that knowledge without context switching. Would that be like kind of a correct statement?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, I couldn't have said it any better, actually. And I think, you know, you've really hit the nail on the head. You've got all the tools that you need, in, especially from a network automation point of view, things that we know, all the tools that we need, you know, from Python, you know, containers, we have everything that we need, really, on these boxes. And it's like, and also you've got to remember as well that everything that's in the box from a security point of view, you are not attaching any external endpoints onto that network. So you've also got that security reassurance as well that now that you've connected that laptop to your network, you know, what you don't know what's went in or what was in your laptop, right? You know, you've got everything, you know, you've got all the utilities on your PC. So if you've got a, let's say, you know, a clean sort of image laptop that doesn't have anything in there, you know, you could connect the console port up and then you will realize that that you've got pretty much everything in there, you know, from the moment that you enable guest shell, the moment that you expose the bash shell itself, Python, it has many type of, it's quite strange actually, because it has a lot three forms of Python, but a lot of people don't know about that, you know.
it's just Python. It's not like iOS Python. It's not like Cisco Python.
So one of the Python, so the native Pythons that run on these boxes, right? They have a native Python. Sure. For example, the one on NXOS actually has got modules, which is quite unique, that are made by Cisco. So it has a module called named Cisco, actually. There's a module called CLI, which is essentially allows it to utilize the underlying hardware system. So it allows you to write Python scripts utilizing the underlying hardware system with that module. And it's doing it via API, from what I recall from my research. So it has quite unique libraries, the native Python. But within the container itself, within CentOS, it has, you know, your Python, the Python that me and you know about, right? It doesn't have those special modules that were developed by Cisco. So it is quite interesting. So you're absolutely right. You've got quite a lot of tools, really. Pretty much, I would say, all the tools that you need in order to automate your infrastructure, whether that's, you know, expanding your layer 2 domain, you know, creating that VX. It has everything. It really does have everything that you need, I think.
All right. Let me take that back. So you do have that special Cisco Python Python with Cisco module and then CLI module. Those goodies. But if you feel like it, you could have the regular Python as well.
Right. Exactly.
Well, you know, Ty, it's great that you brought these up. I really enjoy our conversation. But I mean, you're so far advanced, right? Like, so how, let me ask for the rest of us, right? Like, we're not familiar with it. We haven't done extensive research. How can we get started with playing around with these, you know, these cool containers in iOS?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I recommend is I've noticed about a lot of switches. Whenever I sort of see an iOS XE switch, I realize that the guest container shell has never been turned on, right? They probably don't know about it, right? I mean, and a lot of people don't even know you even have, you know, Python in the old sort of iOS XE devices, like the 3650s. You know, you've got there's Python 2 on there, and I think a lot of people maybe are not aware of how to turn these on and the containers on. So turning the containers on, going into bash, you know, just it's very easy, you know, especially with the NXOS. It's just, you know, feature bash shell and it will turn the bash, and that just exposes the underlying sort of hardware, and then you've got your Linux kernel that you can play with. And the moment, I think you've got to think of it like this, and I think it took me a while to get my head around this, and I think this is probably the key. Do not think of that NXOS or iOS XE device, you know, even if it's, you know, your CSR routers, you know, your virtualized CSR routers, do not think of them as just as a network device, but think of them as a Linux operating system, right? Right. Yeah. Think of it as a Linux. And from that moment, think of it that you've got Ubuntu ready. I know it's quite far-fetched, but it's not really, because you've got all the package management utilities on there, like Yum and so forth. So think of it as that way. The moment you think of it that you can, you know, download packages, download software, Ansible, anything on there, then you realize that, hey, this is not a switch. You know, I'm sitting in front of my Linux box, right? So I think that is one way you can get started. It's just enabling those tools and play around with it as if you're sitting in front of a Linux box, not necessarily a switch. That is one thing that I found quite easy. And then you realize that creativity, there's so many things that you could do, from running containers, Docker. I mean, Docker is actually built into it. You could run a Kubernetes cluster if you wanted to, you know, have a bunch of containers in pods. So there's so many things you could do. There's a book by Cisco, which I highly recommend, and I will, maybe you can.
Put it in the show notes, because I saw you. Is it The Containers in Cisco iOS?
That's right. Yeah. That is great book. I can never pronounce the author's one of the author's name, but he is absolutely fantastic book. I mean, these guys are absolutely amazing. Honestly, it's a genius of a book, and I think maybe the title itself doesn't maybe do justice, because it's assumed that it's just about containers. It is not. Mm. I can assure you, they talk about everything. You know, how to get, you know, how to SSH into the Bash kernel, as opposed to SSH into the switch. I mean, a lot of complex topics are discussed in that book, which I thought, wow, I can't believe, you know, not many people know about this book, right? No, it's an amazing book, and I think once you sort of go through that book, then you can come up with a lot of creative different ways to play around with open NXOS and also Linux as well, because those are the key things. The key I would say is understanding Linux and learning Linux, because once you fully grasp it and you know how to manage Linux, then you realize that, hey, I can run anything on these switches, you know.
Yeah, I get excited just hearing about it. You're now the master of your own domain, right? Like you no longer need to add any external tools. You don't need to rely on this wall garden provided by you. You have those open source tools. And yeah, the book, I mean, I didn't know about the book until you posted. So thank you so much for doing that. I have it already in the show notes. It's called Containers in Cisco iOS XE, iOS XR, and NSOS Orchestration Operation by Yogesh and Najendra. Like you said, I probably, you know, my apology if I, you know, put the name, but like you said, it's brilliant. I haven't read it, but I glanced through it. Just the fact that they talk so deeply about NXOS, like a near real-time OS kernel and all of that, that's amazing.
It is.
And I appreciate your talk about, you know, how turn it on, like you heard it here first, turn it on, change your mindset and be the king of your domain.
absolutely, 100%. And you will realize that you will no longer need, you know, an external sort of endpoint to have your automations. You can have everything done within the network itself. And it's, you know, before you know it, you're going to create your own sort of Python scripts that are running on the you know, interfaces, you know, whether you're trying to capture a specific data or trying to diagnose tools. It's the possibilities are really endless, really.
And if you play Doom, please send me pictures. Send me a ton of pictures if you like, you know, play any kind of games. Maybe please. Just email us, right? Like, don't pass it out so your boss don't see it, but please send us pictures.
Yeah, please. Please do not listen to Eric, because that's
yeah, I didn't tell you.
You're gonna need to change up your CV quite quickly after that.
Do it in your lab box, and you didn't hear from us, right? Like, I'm just saying. Yeah, so Todd, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoy our conversation. The honor is all mine to have you on the show. Thank you for making the time. If people want to, you know more about your thoughts, want to follow you on Twitter, on social, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I'm also on, I've got my own website, networkautomated.com.
Okay.
All the YouTube content. I've also sort of resorted to YouTube content because I find it easy sometimes to express myself verbally as opposed to having it written. You know, YouTube, Twitter, as well as networkautomated.com. Feel free to reach out. You know, if there's anything that you need or any sort of any topic that you don't quite understand what we've discussed today, please feel free to reach out and I will try my best to assist you, really.
Oh my God, be careful what you ask for. I mean, I'm going to be like, you know, unicasting you, like, what is this Linux life cycle thing you talked about? But I appreciate you. I mean, it's been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
No, thank you so much. And you're one of my inspirations, Eric. And keep doing what you do because you do a very amazing job. Amazing.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for the kind words.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Network Automation Nerds podcast today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other podcast platforms. Until next time, bye-bye.